weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, thanks a lot, Ian Day, for driving us through the afternoon. It is Friday, June 28. I'm Shane Dawson, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan are with us to chat Association Football as the League of Ireland returns and Euro 2024 heats up with just 16 teams remaining. Owen Ward chats racing ahead of the Irish Derby, while Gary O'Donnell and Brendan Devaney look forward to four titanic tussles in the All-Ireland Football quarterfinals. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp the show on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company over the next hour. Hopefully you'll stick with us for an hour of sport on this Friday evening. A couple of news headlines to get through before we get stuck into this evening's show, and starting with football as well. Tennis news. Wimbledon top seed Iga Swiatek was handed a tricky first round test at Wimbledon as the world number one was drawn against American Sofia Kenin. The five-time Grand Slam champion looking for her first Wimbledon title will need to quickly get up to speed on the grass courts against the 2020 Australian Open champion. Czech reigning champion Markéta Vondrousová, seeded sixth and in the same quarter of the draw as Swiatek, will open against Spain's Jessica Buza Monero. Second seed Coco Gauff will play in an all-American first round tie against Caroline Dolahide, while third seed Aryna Sabalenka takes on American Emina Baktas. Some other notable first round draws in women's singles include a clash of Grand Slam champions as Victoria Azarenka faces Sloane Stephens, while British wildcard Emma Raducanu is up against Russian 22nd seed Ekaterina Alexandrova. In the men's draw, if, and that's a big if, Andy Murray is fit to play in the singles, he will begin against Czech Tomáš Machák. The good news for the Scot is that he was drawn in the opposite half to defending champion Carlos Alcaraz and will therefore start on Tuesday rather than Monday, giving him an extra day to try to recover from back surgery. Alcaraz, who is seeded to meet world number one Jannik Sinner in the semi-finals, opens against qualifier Mark Lyhal, while Sinner could face former finalist Matteo Berrettini in round two. Novak Djokovic, who appears to have recovered sufficiently from knee surgery, is the second seed and opens against Czech qualifier Vít Kopřiva. So, lots to look forward to in Wimbledon. I mentioned we're starting the show with football, and we will be chatting to Fergal Brennan very shortly and first Alan Colley in League of Ireland, but just football news. Republic of Ireland goalkeeper Courtney Brosnan has ended speculation about her club future by signing a new 2-year contract with Everton, while Jess Zhu has agreed a fresh deal at West Ham. Brosnan, who has cemented her status as the Toffees' first choice stopper since joining from West Ham in 2021, has agreed a new deal which will run until June of 2026. And former Shelburne star and now Irish midfielder Jess Zhu has also signed a new contract, committing herself to West Ham. While the Hammers did not disclose the length of Zhu's new contract, they confirmed that it is a long-term deal.
Game On.
Football.
Now, we are starting with football. Fergal Brennan will join us very shortly to have a conversation on Euro 2024 as the last 16 matches begin this weekend. But firstly, Alan Colley is on the line because the League of Ireland returns after the summer. It's only been a week, Alan. It feels like a lot longer, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, Shane. What Euros? We don't want the Euros.
Well, no, thank God for the Euros. That's kind of, you know, tide is over.
It has. But we did, even though it's only a week, we did miss it, Shane. Great to have it back. And I suppose the good thing about the league coming back now after the mid-season break, which I have to say I don't really agree with, but now that it is back, we'll be kind of coming towards the business end, even though it will take probably still 3 or 4 months. But there is only a handful of games left because obviously to go top heavy in the early part. So it will be obviously lots to be decided in terms of Europe, the league. So it just feels like that title race that we've all wanted, it feels like it's getting a bit closer and closer.
Well, Derry could go top if Shelburne slip up. Shells host Galway United in Tolka Park. 1-0 in Tolka, 1-0 in Éamon Deasy, where the boat results in favour of the home side in each case when these two sides have met over the course of the season so far. Ali Coote and Sam Bone are ineligible until next week for Damien Duff's Shelburne. Speaking of Damien Duff, actually, he said Galway are the hardest working team in the league. Would you agree, Alan?
Yeah, I saw those comments during the week, Shane. And to be fair, you mentioned the two results that they've had previously. I was at the game in Tolka when Shells beat them 1-0 earlier in the season. And to be fair, Galway put up a really good fist of it that night. And I would expect something similar tonight. And to answer your question, I would say that because I think they lack quality. Obviously, just coming up from the First Division into the Premier Division, I don't think John Caulfield would disagree with that either in terms of the quality required to maybe challenge at the top. he would agree with that. But what they lack in quality, they certainly make up for in effort and endeavour. And that's what I think has them so well placed in the league so far, and why they've acquitted themselves so well, because they're tough to beat, they're well organised, and that's largely down to their work rate and their effort.
Mm. So probably not going to be a pretty 90 minutes in Tulke Park. And little to separate the sides at the end of it then, you'd imagine, Alan.
Yeah, I think it will be tight. Like, obviously, the evidence already tells us the two previous games, only a goal in each of them. Shells coming out the better of each result. And I think it will be something similar tonight. And as well, the fact that they haven't played in a couple of weeks, Shane, it might just take maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, just to get themselves back up to speed again. I know it's a short break, but just to adjust back into top-flight football. And it's an important game for Shelburne now that they're on top of the league. You mentioned Derry, they have the opportunity, obviously, to overtake them tonight. So every game is so important for Shelburne now. Even before the break, we would have always felt they were important games. But the fact that we're into the second half of the season now, and because there's less games in the second half, we are coming towards the business end. So every game is so important. And the fact that Shelburne have put themselves in such an unbelievable position to be top of the table, with only, I think it's 15, 16 games to go, they'll want to stay there and maintain that. Obviously, the loss of Gavin Malloy was huge during the break, and it'll be interesting to see how to adapt and who'll slot in beside Paddy Barr. It'll probably be Ledwidge and maybe Tyreek Wilson play left full. But obviously, the signing of Sam Bone, who's ineligible tonight, but he may come into the team as well. So it'll be just interesting to see how they adjust to that and what Duff comes up with. But certainly in terms of where they're at and how well they've done this season. And I know sometimes you want to be, obviously, the cynical fan, but don't be worrying, Shane. They'll be there till the end. They've had an unbelievable run of it so far. They've Europe to come. The good times are back in Tulke Park, let me tell you.
The treble is still on, Alan Colley. It's sold out in Inchicore.
I want to hear you speak like that from now till the end of the season. I won't have anything else.
A final one on that. I did mention Ali Coote and Sam Boner ineligible, as is Bobby Burns for Galway, who won't be available this week. Sold out, as I said, St. Pat's and Bohemians in Richmond Park, 7:45 p.m. kickoff. The transfer window has been a point of change for Stephen Kenny, with several players departing and old faces returning for both clubs in Joseph Nyang and Ross Tierney. Again, all new players must wait until July 1st to get full clearance. Pressure on both sides really hit the ground running, considering their current league standings.
Yeah, I think more so on Bohemians, because it's been so hit and miss, obviously, since Alan Reynolds has come in. There was the issue before the break as well, where he was off with the under-21s, which I didn't agree with. I would be in total agreement with the fans who were kicking up about that. I didn't think it was a good look for Bohemians and for Alan Reynolds, especially with such an important league game on the Thursday night. So I think there's more pressure on them. But I think the acquisition of Ross Tierney back in the club is really, really good. He obviously had a great time of it before he went away. And to have him back, I think that certainly adds the quality to the squad, which they need to bounce themselves up the table. Stephen Kenny, to be fair, I know it took a little bit of time, but they finished off the first part of the season with an unbelievable result against Shamrock Rovers. The break probably came at a bad time for them, but I definitely think they'll be looking to improve on where they've been so far. And he's already trying to put a stamp on it with the acquisition of Joseph Nyang, a good goalkeeper, solid goalkeeper coming back into the club. And I think there'll be more to come into the club as well, because Stephen will want to put a stamp all over. He's mentioned that a few times about obviously trying to improve the squad and a bit of a transitional period. He won't want that transition period to go on too long. He'll want to obviously be up near the top and competing for European places and potentially a league title in the next year or two. But I think you will see in the next 18 months a different look to St. Pat's completely to what we see now.
I mentioned it might be a bit of a dogged affair in Tulke Park. This, I just have a feeling this could be a cracker of a match with plenty of goals, plenty of entertainment.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you mentioned sold out in Tulke Park. I think it's sold out in Richmond as well, so it's going to be a cracker. And it is. Look, the interest, we've spoken about it all season, Shane, about the interest being there, the hype. It's absolutely fantastic. And I think even more so now, because people have missed it for a couple of weeks, and now that it's back, a break from the European matches with no games on tonight in the Euros, and people will be mad to get out and watch a game and a decent evening in Dublin as well. I know there's plenty of other distractions going on over the Aviva Stadium and Malahide and concerts, but I don't think too many of those football fans will be distracted by what's going on in the Aviva or Malahide tonight.
No, be interesting to see the Venn diagram of Taylor Swift and League of Ireland fans. Out west, it will be a poignant occasion for Sligo Rovers after the death of one of their most well-known fans, Tommy Gorman, and Rory Houston from RT Online had penned a lovely tribute on the RT Sport website that I'd encourage anyone to give a read. The official tribute will be held for next Thursday's match against Derry. There will be a bit of a somber mood in the showgrounds as well, and I think in Rory's piece as well, any donations the late Tommy Gorman even said should go to the showgrounds development fund as well. Did you have any dealings with Tommy? I know you're a Sligo man, Alan.
I did. I knew Tommy personally. I actually was in the same class as my dad at school as well, so we go back a long way, Shane. And I suppose when I started then in RTE, Tommy had seen me and touched base with my dad and just offered if there was anything he could ever do or any little kind of tips for guidance and help, and he reached out like that. So a lovely man, all the tributes, I've read them all. It actually caught me on the hop, to be honest with you, because all the tributes were being paid to Micheál Omar-Hertig on the same day, and then when I got the news of Tommy passing as well on the same day, two great men, it was very sad, and it was sudden, to be fair. So I would echo all the sentiments of what's been said about Tommy. A really lovely man, loved Sligo Rovers. Everybody knows Sligo Rovers is the heart and soul of the community down there, and Tommy, the fact that he would have spent a lot of time in Dublin with his work commitments, always made his way home to the showgrounds or if there was a game in Dublin, and as you say, even in his last days, any donations that he's still thinking of sending towards the football club and the stadium development as well. So a really lovely man and a huge loss, I suppose, to Sligo town, not just the Sligo Rovers as well, and everyone in RTE, because he was a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah, no, very well said, Alan, and I personally pass on my sincerest condolences to everyone who knew Tommy, all his friends and family, his colleagues, and indeed everyone at Sligo Rovers, who I think everyone has a Tommy Gorman story, which is really beautiful. You know, on the pitch then, at times it matters little when something as significant as that happens. But Shamrock Rovers travelling to Sligo, they are in a position similar to Pats, similar to Bows, where they can't really waste any time in terms of results now after the mid-season break.
No, I think what you call it is pressure, Shane. And they're under serious pressure. They really are. Like I've been saying all season, all our chats, all our conversations about the league up to now, I've definitely felt as though that Shamrock Rovers would eventually go on some sort of a run. I did say it to you, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks back when Shelburne went up to Tala. I was at the game and they beat them 1-0. And it was the first night I kind of changed my mind and thought Shelburne now have a realistic chance of winning the league, and Shamrock Rovers really need to kick into gear. And even since then we haven't seen that, and it's been still littered with inconsistency and poor results. And now they're 12 points behind of a very good Shelburne team that don't lose many matches, don't concede too many goals. So I think they need to go on a serious run between now and the end of the season if they are to try and hold on to their crown, because they're really, really up against it and they're really under serious pressure, and they need to see a big response, I think, from Stephen Bradley's point of view and the players as well.
Lee Grace, like looking at the players who are unavailable, Lee Grace, Neil Ferrugia, Dara Burns, Dan Cleary, Sean Kavanagh, Rory Gaffney all out. Now, to be fair, all those players could return next week when Rovers host Dundalk in Tala. Josh Honahan is available this week. Sligo manager John Russell boosted by the return of both Nando Pineacker and Simon Power as well. So Sligo might be confident of nicking results, particularly considering they're at home.
Yeah, and as you mentioned there, obviously it's going to be a very poignant night in the showground, so it'll be really up for the game. Anytime Shamrock Rovers come to the showgrounds, it's always a brilliant atmosphere as well, and it'll be no different tonight, but it almost feels like they'll really want to give Tommy the send-off that he deserves, and I've no doubt they will, and that translates onto the pitch as well with the players, but they'll be really well revved up for this game. And it's not like they need any motivation, but if there is extra motivation needed, wouldn't it be a lovely send-off for Tommy if they were to take the scalp of Shamrock Rovers tonight? So it will be a difficult game for Shamrock Rovers. You mentioned the absentees, but there's still enough quality in that squad to cause any team problem around the league. But Sligo Rovers getting Simon Power back, and if they can get a run of games into him as well, I think that'll be a big addition to the squad. And it's an addition to need as well. I think they've been average enough, to be honest with you, Shane. You know, they're up against it in terms of where they are in the league as well, so improvements are needed in the showgrounds and from Sligo Rovers. So it'll be a big night in the showgrounds for both clubs, but I'd love to see Tommy get the send off that he deserves with the 3 points.
I mentioned at the start of our chat and at the start of the show, any slip ups by Shelburne and Derry could overtake them. Derry, they went into the break with a late win at Bohemians, their third in a row, and now it's a big chance to keep the momentum going at home to draw.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, I suppose, Shane, that they need to keep the momentum going, because I don't think Shelburne, as I said, they're going anywhere. So Derry, obviously, no, they would have, I suppose, at the start of the season, they would have been looking at Shamrock Rovers as their main title challengers. Now, I still don't think Shamrock Rovers are out of the picture fully, but I think the most direct competition for them, and not just because they're at the top of the league, but because I don't think Shelburne are going anywhere, is Shelburne now, and they have to overtake them. So all of a sudden, their eyes have kind of gone off Shamrock Rovers a little bit and thinking, we need to overtake Shelburne. So big night tonight. They've picked up a couple of good results before the break, Derry, and that word you use, momentum. They need to hit the ground running tonight, obviously, against the team that are struggling, Drogheda. And it's almost like as if the wheels have come off a little bit just before the start of just before the end of the break there, the last two or three games on the trot, and I'd almost feeling, I'm getting the sense that the wheels are coming off a little bit, and it's a tough ask for them to try and maintain just being competitive week in, week out. So it's a big night for Derry. They'll be half favourites. Everybody expects them to get the 3 points, and I think they will as well.
Final one before we chat Euro 2024. You're going to stay with us, Alan and Fergal. Brendan will be joining us. Dundalk, Waterford. Dundalk gave themselves a bit more of a realistic chance of staying up with victory over Sligo Rovers before the break. Now after the break, can they keep that going? Will they get a win at home to Waterford?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they'll get a win, but I definitely think, to answer your first part of the question, Shane, that they will keep it going, because John Daly has certainly got a bounce since he's gone in. I think their home record, even before John came in, was quite good. I don't think they've conceded in 8 games, if I'm not mistaken, at home. So a hell of a home record that is in terms of keeping a clean sheet. So I do think it'll be a tough game for Waterford. I think Waterford are better at home. Their record on the road isn't as good. So I think they could pick up the 3 points, but it'll be a tight enough affair up there. But certainly in terms of, I suppose, the bigger picture for Dundalk and fears of relegation, I can't see that now. I think they'll be fine. And once, I suppose, John Daly maybe brings in one or two himself once the window opens, I think Dundalk will be fine. They've a good enough squad to be better placed than where they are at the moment anyway. But I think since John has come in, I think he was a good manager to get at the time, because it was somebody that came in that knew the league inside out, so he could hit the ground running. And I think it's been a good appointment. So I think Dundalk will be fine.
Okay, they are the Premier Division fixtures. Just to note the First Division matches this evening. It is first against third Cork host Bray. Second place UCD are away to Cove. Athlone host Treaty United. Wexford are on the road to Kerry. And bottom placed Longford looking to get some more points on the board. They host fifth place Finn Harps. However, I did mention we're going to chat Euro 2024. Alan, you're sticking with us. Fergal Brennan joins the conversation. Fergal, we are down to the last 16. Four of the last 16 matches take place this weekend. Switzerland, Italy tomorrow at 5. Germany, Denmark, 8 o'clock tomorrow. And then on Sunday, England, Slovakia at 5 bells before Spain and Georgia at 8 p.m. on Sunday evening. What are you most looking forward to seeing this weekend, Fergal?
I'm still sticking with my favourite, Germany, to win it. I'm excited to see how they're going to get on tomorrow night. I think in terms of the group stages, we've seen them kind of stretch their legs a bit. It wasn't an easy group, but I don't really think, other than a bit in the final game when Julian Nagelsmann made a few changes, we've not really seen them pushed too much. This will be the first time against the Denmark team that's got lots of experience and know how to play in tournament football. Obviously, they got to the semi-finals in Euro 2020. They will be a challenge for Germany. Looking at some of the other games, obviously England, Slovakia, there'll be a huge amount of focus on that. Spain and Georgia. Spain, the only team to go through with 9 points from the groups. And then obviously Georgia, upsetting the odds somewhat, particularly in that last game against Portugal. They were fantastic, deserving of their spot in the knockout stages. Spain sometimes have got a bit of a habit of getting into their own heads in knockout stage football at major tournaments. That could be one to keep an eye on. Remember back to Morocco in the World Cup in 2022. But Germany, I'm really looking forward to tomorrow, because I think they need a bit of a test just to give a real yardstick of where they are so far in the tournament.
Alan, Fergal mentioned obviously great results for Georgia defeating Portugal. Is there any hope that they might stun Spain as well on Sunday?
I think there is, to be honest with you, Shane. I cover two of their games in the group stages, and obviously everybody speaks about the Portugal result, but in the other two games they played ever so well also, and really acquitted themselves so well, not just in terms of, I suppose, defensively, but I thought also they've offered a threat throughout the tournament. In possession, they're very good. Watch out for a centre midfielder, Kokarashvili. I think he's been probably one of the players of the group stages. He's absolutely fantastic centre midfielder. Everybody speaks about Kvaratskhelia, and of course he's their superstar. And like all, I suppose, the smaller nations, you do need a superstar if you are to pull off the odd big result, like we've seen with maybe a Gareth Bale over the years, or so he's something similar, Kvaratskhelia Skelly, and he's been fantastic, but defensively he's been sound as well. And they play with such heart and drive and determination, Shane, and togetherness, and that can carry us so far. Of course, they're going to be up against it in terms of Spain, but throughout those games that we watched, even in the group stages, they have no problem sitting in the low block and suffering basically the other team having lots of possession, and that's what we've seen. Spain will completely dominate the ball and dominate possession, as they do against most teams, but certainly against Georgia at the weekend. But Georgia have a real threat on the counter-attack with Kvaratskhelia. He's a brilliant ball carrier, gets the team up the pitch 50-60 yards just with his dribbling skills alone, and then when he does get into the final third 1v1 situations, he's capable of producing a moment of magic like we've seen so far. Also Mika Tadza, he's the top scorer at the moment. He has 3 goals in the tournament, and he's a real threat as well. So even though on paper it looks like it'll be a formality for Spain, I don't think so at all. And I think that's what we've seen. It'll be something similar. I know we'll probably get to it in a moment about England and Slovakia, but it'll be something similar with them as well. So I think these are tough games for the likes of England and Spain.
Yeah, hopefully it is a free-flowing open match between Spain and Georgia. And that would lead me on to Fergal, Switzerland, Italy. Might be a bit more of a turgid affair, might be a bit of a slow burner this weekend.
Yeah, and I think that'll play into Switzerland's hands, because Italy, for me, I've not been wildly impressed with them. I know we kind of have the old cliche of they're a very good tournament team and they kind of spring into life as the tournament progresses, but they've been living on the nerves too much for my liking. Obviously, they fell behind in the opening game and did well to bounce back against Albania, but I think it was the 7th or the 8th minute of added time where they got that equaliser against Croatia. They were hanging on. I personally, watching the game, thought that Croatia would be able to see it out when you think of the experience that they've got in those types of situations. And you do give a bit of credit to Italy in that sense, of course, but they really don't look the of Euro 2020. I was going to say 4 years ago, 3 years ago, technically. When they just kind of marched to the final, they were just ruthless through the group stages. Not amazing, not tearing teams to pieces, but just really, really good. A banker to get through the games that they needed to. I haven't watched the full 90 minutes of them in the group stages and thought, yes, you're in the running to make a bit of a splash in the knockout stages. And then with Switzerland, again, similarly to Denmark, you know what you're going to get. Experience at this kind of last 16 to quarter-final level, particularly in European Championships. Jerdan Shaqiri loves this tournament, loves scoring big goals. I think this possibly is the most likely for an upset. There's probably not as much of a gap on paper between Switzerland and Italy as there is between Georgia and Spain, so might not qualify as a full-on upset. But looking at the fixtures with a kind of so-called big boy, Italy the holders, Switzerland have a bit of a free hit here. I just think that Italy are a bit undercooked, and Switzerland very solid, very organised, well coached, all those kind of slightly boring things that you might associate with certain teams, that gets you through knockout football. So that'd be kind of the one I'm leaning to maybe upset the odds a wee bit.
Okay, let's get your thoughts on the final match of the weekend then, England-Slovakia at 5 p.m. Alan, if I come back to you before I chat to Fergal. We're going to be previewing the All-Ireland quarterfinals after the break, and I really liken England to Derry this year. Like, will it come good, Alan, or is it just going to continue on? And when I say continue on, it mightn't be the prettiest, but they're still grinding out results. They're still playing knockout football. If Alan Colley is still with us. Alan, can you hear us?
Yeah, sorry, Shane. I just only caught the end of it here.
No, I was teeing up a long-winded question, and I'll shorten it down to, will England improve against Slovakia, basically?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Shane. Will they improve? They have to improve. I don't think, certainly in terms of their aspirations to win the tournament, they have to improve. It's as simple as that. If they keep playing anything like we've seen in those three group games, they have absolutely no chance of winning the tournament. It might get them through on Sunday, but certainly when they play the big boys, they have no chance of winning the tournament. So they have to start now. Obviously, they've taken a lot of criticism. I think justified criticism as well. I don't think they're any position to show any kickback from that and get involved in spats with the likes of Gary Lineker or Alan Shearer or anyone that's criticising them. I think it's fully justified because they've been so poor. I have no problem with a team playing poorly if they're showing signs of exactly what you're trying to do in terms of the plan or the execution, but we've seen anything but. I think a lot of it falls on Southgate's door. I think he's afraid to make the big calls in terms of the big players. He'll need to maybe drop one or two. Whether he'll do that, I don't know. The whole Trent Alexander-Arnold thing has been an absolute mess. Trying to experiment in the major tournament, I don't think you can get away with that, and that's what we've seen. And it almost feels like he's been made a scapegoat, which I think is wrong on the lad. Sort of big questions to answer, and I suppose we'll find out on Sunday whether they're going to answer those questions. I think it'll be a tough game. Again, I covered Slovakia, and if you look out for their three midfielders, they're very, very good. Lobotka plays with Napoli, excellent player, centre midfield. Duda just to the right of him, and Kutska to the left. Those three are excellent, so I think it'll be a huge battle. Whoever plays in there in terms of Rice or Bellingham or Conor Gallagher, or it'll be Kobbie Mainoo, I think he'll probably start with. So that'll be a huge battle in there. And then the Skriniar centre-half, he's a brilliant centre-half, playing with PSG, huge experience. So it's going to be a tough game for England, and they have to improve, Shane, they really do. Do I see it happening? I really don't. I honestly don't. I just don't think South has it in them to get the best out of these players, and that's been the major problem.
Mm. Fergal, final word to you. Do you think we will see sweeping changes in style even, or will Southgate stick with what he's produced as manager tactically in the group stage?
I don't think there'll be sweeping changes. I think there'll be some changes. Obviously, Alan's touched on Trent Alexander-Arnold there and the change to bring Conor Gallagher in for the last game. That's probably going to be the only change that I can see. Kobbie Mainoo from Manchester United looks like he's going to get the start alongside Declan Rice. There's been calls for Anthony Gordon and Cole Palmer to play. And in fairness to the situation, I don't really think that's massively justified. I think they've come on and shown a couple of flashes and they've had good seasons. Cole Palmer's had a very good season. But Bukayo Saka is still excellent in that position. Phil Foden is a fantastic player, probably being played out of position within this current system, but they still should have had enough to get through the group with a bit more to spare than they have. They should still have enough to get past Slovakia this weekend. But I just think, kind of going back to Euro 2020, and I mentioned this last week when I was on, Southgate's deal that time was Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice sitting deep, very, very, very straightforward, a lot of players behind the ball, and saying to the front four, go and win the game. So Kane, Saka, and then it was Raheem Sterling and Mason Mount. Now it's Bellingham and Foden that have been thrown in there. He doesn't seem to be willing to do that because I think he's kind of trapped in this position where he's naturally quite a conservative manager and he's feeling the pinch to be more progressive than he feels even remotely comfortable with. And that, for me, is where he's getting it wrong, because it's not in his nature to make these calls. The Trent Alexander-Arnold one is the big one for me. I don't see a situation where Gareth Southgate is particularly comfortable playing Trent Alexander-Arnold in midfield, but he's feeling the pinch, he's feeling the squeeze to make these calls. And that probably is the most damning thing of Gareth Southgate up until this tournament. People might not have agreed with what he's done, but he's done things his way. He's backed himself, he's backed his players, he's backed his decisions. We've seen this with Harry Maguire and various other people. And generally, the players have responded to that because he's had their back. Now he's making decisions that are very un-Gareth Southgate. And that, for me, is what's undermining England. Talented as they are, that's the big undermining situation. Because I just think the players are looking at him and saying, OK, we can see how this works, but this isn't you. This isn't the England team that we've been playing for 3-4 years. And that lack of certainty, Alan touched on it there, tournaments are no time for experimenting. That's exactly what's happening here, and that's why they're falling short.
OK, well, lots to look forward to in the Euros this weekend. Lots to look forward to in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship quarterfinals as well. We'll be previewing those after the break. Alan Colley, Fergal Brennan, thank you both very, very much for taking the call this evening.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, Gary O'Donnell and Brendan Devaney join us to chat Gaelic football, because things are getting serious amid a season of much discontent. As James McMahon wrote in the RTÉ Sport website, four group winners, Dublin, Kerry, Donegal and Armagh, have had a week off, a much valued period of quiet preparation. The other quartet, Galway, Roscommon, Derry and Louth, were worked to varying degrees last weekend, a squeezed season putting a greater requirement on how quickly the batteries will be recharged. The group winners will get the nod to advance, although you could not rule out a surprise or two, something to put a shudder in the perceived natural order. Gentlemen, great to have your company here on Game On. Gary, if I come to you first, and if we start with your own Galway against Derry tomorrow, 6:15 throw in. Across 10 meetings up to now, Galway have only beaten Dublin twice in the championship. The last of those wins came in 1934. What do Galway need to do in order to get over the line against the Dubs on Saturday, Gary?
Yeah, they probably need a lot to go right for them, to be fair. Coming into the game, I suppose everyone kind of in Galway anyway, was expecting them to be in the last eight up to now. Probably would have wanted the extra week off, like it's been highlighted up to now, and maybe avoided one of these big teams maybe until the last four, even the final. But it is what it is now. Galway know that. Last week coming over Monaghan, it was kind of normal service in the sense that they just got through the game. Everyone expected them to win it. They grinded it out. They looked in trouble maybe after 20 minutes, but they just managed to grind out the victory and get over the line, got minutes into Damien Comer. The positive going into this game for Galway is the team that they've named seems to be the strongest team that they have available. It's been highlighted all year, the injuries that they've had and the difficult league campaign and early championships that they had with absences and all that. But it's great just to have, you have your big players back on the pitch. You've good bench. All the injuries seem to have cleared up for now. I know Shane Walsh came off with an injury before half time last week, but I'd still expect him to start. Damien got his 20 odd minutes, Damien Comer, and just for the game to go right for Galway, I would expect you need all those big players playing for the 70, and the tactics up to now, and particularly in the Connacht final, I look back to the Mayo match, worked a treat where they just kind of contained Mayo for most of the game and then just opened up with 20 minutes to go. They actually held Shane Walsh in reserve that day and brought him in. I thought it worked really, really well. Possibly could be an option tomorrow as well. And for them to beat Dublin, I would see something similar tomorrow where the first 40, 50 minutes, they'll keep it nice and tight, contain Dublin as much as they can, go tit for tat, point or two in it all the time, and then maybe open up with 20 minutes to go, press kick outs and drive forward. But they need a lot to go right for them, no doubt, but it's certainly a big performance in this team, yeah.
How big of a boost is the fact that Port Joyce does have a full deck to choose from, Brendan, because that means they're going to be so defensively solid, the structure is going to be right, and then you have the Comer, the Shane Walsh factor as well, Brendan.
Yeah, listen, if you hear Joyce's interview last week, he said that, Walsh going off was no big deal because he was having no impact in the game anyway. So the Walsh factor is very much a question mark. You know we Comer what he's going to give you. What's the percentage of his fitness in there? Do you start him? Do you bring him on? Sean Kelly looks like he's carrying a bit of a knock. But outside that, Galway have serious power, particularly around midfield. They can mix it with anybody. Do they use Kelly as a possible man marker on Fenton? We've seen in the past as well. And certainly the form of Finnerty's been top class, as I say, out around midfield, Conroy, and some of the play that they have. I think they need to go after Dublin. If they sit, Dublin love a game of football. They love going at teams. They'll take you apart whatever way you want to do it. So that cagey nature that Galway played Monaghan at, I know Monaghan dictated some of the tactics and that, but they're going to have to hit, and Joyce has said it himself, they're going to have to hit upwards of 20 points. They can't do that playing defensive, so they must have a huge attacking element to their game. So if Walsh is there, he's going to have one of his top class games, which we haven't seen. So you're relying on a lot of other things to fall into place, but Galway certainly have the armory, they have the ability, but they're going to have to attack Dublin. If they sit in Dublin, Dublin will beat them. They have to have them two elements of the game, so that nature that we've seen Galway play the last number of matches won't work in this game. And listen, I agree with Gary, if they're going to have to play out their skins to take this Dublin team, Dublin don't lose quarterfinals, and that is the big thing.
Yeah, so that one throws in at 6:15 tomorrow. Before that, though, at 4 p.m, Armagh Roscommon, a bit of an interesting one, Gary, the ferocity of the Armagh defence playing up against the flair of the Roscommon attack. Plenty of battles here, and it's probably fair to say whoever comes out on top, it won't be a landslide victory.
No, it won't. And, this is going to be an interesting game, if you ask me. They'll be crowded. Both have great support. It's a game worth getting into before the Galway game. I actually fancy Roscommon for this. I think Roscommon could cause an upset here. I think there's a lot of pressure on Armagh. I think getting top of the group against us a few weeks ago was a big coup for them, obviously. Ulster final was a big blow to them, but they've come back from that really well. I think there's a lot of pressure on them to reach a semi-final. I really do. I think they're a fine team. I really do. I think they've been coming for a couple of years. I think Kieran McGeaney's done a fine job with them and all that, but I fancy Roscommon. Roscommon have come in under the radar. I know they haven't been overly impressive up to now, but they'll have a bit of momentum behind them. But as you said, I think there'll be nothing in it. I think there'll be a few points in it. Roscommon have super forwards. They always do. And they can, you'd be talking there about Galway trying to hit 20 points against Dublin. Roscommon can hit a high score against any team that play, particularly in Croke Park as well. I know Armagh will be you know, sticking to the particular game plan they've had all year, where they've been sometimes nearly too structured at times in defence and attack. But I think Roscommon could cause a bit of an upset in that game. It'll be very, very tight, like you said, but I'm going to tip Roscommon in this one, put my neck on the block here.
Brendan, are you going to put your neck on the line similar to Gary?
Yeah, again, it depends. It depends. Good man, Gary, you got to do that, lad. It depends what Armagh team's going to turn up there. And guys, listen, Armagh have mixed it up. I mean, even in games, you know, the first half against Donegal, that was a final, brilliant. Second half, back into that passive possession-based Armagh doesn't suit them. You know, you look at the way they took Derry apart, you know, how they played, and then went down to Galway, and they went back into that shell. So if the Armagh team turns up that goes after Roscommon, that's a danger. You know, Roscommon again, flip side, fair play to David Burke. I mean, had a shootout with Cavan and then locked it down against Tyrone and totally nullified their threats. And you were thinking if they played like they did against Cavan, Tyrone would beat them. Completely different game plan. So great to see. And I think this is the most intriguing game of the game of the weekend, because Armagh are so desperate and everything that's come before it is in play in this game for them. Roscommon, in a similar way, have never got the respect, even though they've came close to it quite a few times. They've always ended the season in a bad defeat, and it's rubbished everything else that they've done good. So, I mean, the last day, only four scored. You know, Dara Craig, Cox, Murta and Donny Smith. It was an old-fashioned type of game. Sit defensively solid in your shape, break up the pitch, give it to your shooters and put it over the bar. That's an old-style way of playing. If you look at all the other top teams, there's a spread of scores all over them. Whether that'll affect them enough, you know, end of Smith's form is a bit of a worry. They need him chipping on my scores as well if it's down to the four lads. But certainly Roscommon will think, why not? I just think with Armagh, particularly with the way the Creeley and Grimley new partnership in the field, it allows Wayne O'Neill to drop off and pick their passes all over the pitch. So if Armagh go after Roscommon, I expect them to win the match. But if both teams play at cagey, I think it's advantage Roscommon.
Interestingly, Roscommon manager Davy Burke has made one change to the side that knocked out Tyrone. Ronan Daly comes in for Dylan Rann, lining out at centre-back as Ulton Harney moves up to centre-forward. Kieran McGeaney also makes one switch to his side. Paddy Burns coming into the full-back line in place of Kieran Higgins. Stephen Campbell, who scored the equalising point against Galway that sent Armagh through his Group 1 winners, is again on the bench, as is Conor Mackin, who returns after serving a suspension. Gary, Loud and Donegal 1:15 on Sunday, live on RT to the RT player and indeed Sunday Sport and RT Radio 1. How will Loud approach this match, Gary?
I think they'll approach it like they've had all the games up to now. It's served them really, really good. Like, so if you go back to the Leinster final as well too, like they've pushed Dublin early, apart from maybe Mayo and the game down in Hyde this year, they've pushed Dublin to the pin of their collar in Croke Park, which is an easy thing to do. And alluding to the Galway game, that's another factor that I think that'll be difficult to overcome, is the Croke Park factor against Dublin. But Loud, I think, going into this game against Donegal, I think it's bonus territory for them. Like, they've had a fantastic season. Sir Brendan's done an amazing job with them, to be fair, particularly with the way things finished up with them last year with Mickey Hart leaving. I think they're in bonus territory here getting to this game. I think they can have a free shot at it. I don't think they'll change much the way they've been playing up to now. I think they'll try and again contain, stay in the game as long as they can against Donegal, which won't be easy. Donegal has had their few weeks off now. They'll be raring to go. You, no doubt McGuinness will have them primed for this last eight. This has been looking at all year. Everything has gone to plan for them up to now. It'll be a difficult task for Loud, but you certainly wouldn't rule them out up to now. It's been a dream campaign for them. They've really acquitted themselves really well throughout the championship, to be fair. But I just think Donegal might just have a bit too much for them going down the home straight.
Yeah, it's really pointing towards Donegal being more efficient, I suppose, than Loud, and perhaps having that better quality. Are there any chinks in the Donegal armour that you might be concerned with, Brendan?
No, none. That's all I'm saying on it. Shane. Shane, listen. 1-9 last week against Cork, that's not going to beat Donegal. Let's be honest about it. Cork had loads of opportunities too to maybe punch your holes. That said, you know, agree with Gary, what a season it's been from them. And they're missing a couple of their better players too, getting this. You know, you think of the likes of Kieran Downey, probably one of their best footballers. And recently, Niall Sharkey went away travelling to Australia just before the morning game, which was unbelievable. I mean, Kerry as well, Darren McConnell, top forward at the start of the season, you know. So there's quite a few players, Peter Lynch as well, that are actually missing from this. But, you know, after Hart left, doom and gloom, and there's a lot of people question Mark Jerry Brennan coming in. He's assembled an amazing team there. James McCartan, Niall Monaghan, Moynihan in the background. David White, who came along with him from Murfield. You know, they've assembled a massive team. You know, James Downey in there, performance coach. So they are on the right path. That system that they play is perfect for a Donegal team to open them up and take them apart. And if you look at Donegal's performance against Clare, they were really on the money. It's a game that they could have fell into a trap of it being too easy. Even in the second half, there was a serious professionalism. And I just think the forwards, that basically Donegal say playing with seven half forwards, they're adept at breaking down the system. So again, you're going to look for something from Louth, like the way that Cork beat Donegal. They're going to probably score three goals, I think, to go and beat this Donegal side, because there's points all over the pitch, everywhere from Donegal. And if you look at Louth the last day, only Burns inside scored 2 points from playing the whole forward line. You know, Mulroy got four frees. You know, that said, you know, say McKinney's playing fantastic. Lennon, Craig Lennon, what a season he's had. You know, the likes of Dernan and Early and these guys, big men at midfield. So if they back off Donegal's kick out and just give them the attacks, Donegal will pick the pockets and hurt them. So listen, it's going to be a difficult proposition for Louth, but as you're saying there, Gary was saying, it's absolutely phenomenal. The buzz in Louth is unreal. They are making steps and making waves, but I think this one might be just a step too far.
Yeah, no, it is brilliant. The first ever All-Ireland quarterfinal for Louth since the quarterfinals were created, I suppose, in 2001. It's interesting, when you both were previewing Roscommon Armagh, in my head I was like, what Roscommon are going to show up? What Armagh team are going to show up? And that leads me on to Kerry Derry. For Kerry, they've been calm and calculated. Derry have been chaotic and inconsistent. So Gary, what Derry team do you feel will show up to Croke Park Sunday at 3:15?
Yeah, look at a couple of weeks ago, I was nearly kind of writing their season off in many ways in my head. They've made a great recovery, in fairness, since particularly the day they played at Galway down in Pearse Stadium. A lot of things went wrong from that day. It just seems to be the wind seems to be going out of their season, but they've recovered really well since that, particularly the last day, I suppose, against Mayo. I know they grinded out a result against Westmeath. Injuries haven't been great for them either. McInnes obviously back the last day was a huge addition to them. The way they finished out that game, the confidence they'll give them. They will not fear Kerry at all up in Croke Park. Now, this game is needed for Kerry in many ways. They haven't been tested at all up to now. I know I was talking to people around the Munster final time when Kerry were playing Clare, and a lot of people were questioning Kerry. I felt that Kerry were exactly where they wanted to be in terms of they played that Munster final, they got a good test. A lot of people were talking about Clare, a lot of people were questioning Kerry's credentials, etc. I think they're exactly where they want to be. I think they've trialled and tested quite a lot of things. The over-reliance on the two Cliffords have been the case the last couple of years. I think they've kind of spread the scores with White and O'Bugleik and the midfielders and so on chipping in with scores throughout the year. This is going to be a really good game, I think. I think Derry will go at them very hard, obviously, from where go from you know, the likes of McInnes, Glass, McCaig, all coming from deep. I think this will be a good test of both teams. I do think probably that the road that Derry have been on up to now could maybe catch them slightly, in the sense that there's a lot of games played over the last couple of weeks. They picked up a couple of injuries, the extra time last week. Even though it will go down the wire, I just fancy Kerry maybe to pick them at the post as well.
Would you agree with that, Brendan?
Yeah, I do fancy Kerry, and even a wee bit more than that. You know, I just can't believe Mayo last week at home. You know, this Derry team, if I was Mayo, you're going to go at them from the get-go and get about them, because they were brittle, obviously. Like, from the team that I seen that day in Celtic Park, you know, against Armagh, I cannot believe it. Fair play to Derry, by the way, for swinging it round and coming back in it. But Mayo allowed Derry to grow into the game and get that wee bit of confidence, and suddenly you've seen, you know, players start to really get energised, and Glass and Rodgers in particular, and as Gary's saying, that half back line was back in. You know, you look at even McGuigan coming in the extra time, Ethan Doherty, they all started to get a wee bit of form, even Lynch and Nets. But that wee bit of form, you're up another good few notches, and I think this Kerry team, and I agree, you know, the spread of scores across the pitch has been brilliant. That said, you know, I mean, you look at particularly Clifford, you know, 463 they've had so far in the Championship. He's only had 212 of it. Now, you can't say he's obviously decoy running and being unselfish, but he's not hitting the form that he is. O'Shaughnessy's only hit 9 points. So even though they're still racking up big scores against lesser opposition, you'll want your key men to be hitting the higher targets. Now, whether this Derry team's going to sit. And Kerry are one of those sides that like to score. They're rapid fire. They hit you. They don't like to play about. They like to go through you. So Derry's defensive shape is going to have to be perfect and see if they can really maybe take a bit of wind out of Kerry. But if Kerry go at them, they have the ability to take this side apart. Don't forget, Derry scored 111 in the first half last year's semi-final against Kerry. This is not the same Derry team. You know, if it was, I'd be thinking anything's possible here. Now, they have got it together. They will, compared with a few weeks ago, as I say, with Armagh, I think they'll give Kerry a game. But I think the guys in Kerry have beaten everybody very convincingly. They were saying who they play yet. But the way they took, particularly Louth for me, was a game I really started to see them move. And I think they're primed for this game. Their season now is, for Kerry, is really starting here. And that's ominous for this Derry team, because they're not at the form they were last year in a semi-final that they probably should have beaten Kerry.
Well, here's hoping for four competitive clashes over the weekend. For now, we'll leave the conversation there. Brendan Devaney and Gary O'Donnell, thank you both very much for joining us on Game On. Just to note, the draw for the All-Ireland semi-finals, if one is required, will take place in the Sunday game live after the last eight clash between Kerry and Derry on RTE1 this Sunday evening. The draw is subject to the avoidance of repeat pairings from any stage in the championship. The match is live on RTE1, I may have said RTE2, and it will be streamed as well. And radio coverage on Saturday Sport and RTE Radio 1 and Sunday Sport on RTE Radio 1 as well. Don't go anywhere, because we've racing coming up with Owen Ward.
RTE
2FM.
Game On.
Racing.
Now, Owen Ward joins us to chat racing as one of the marquee weekends and the Irish racing calendar is upon us with the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby, and it is a packed weekend with 25 races across the 3 days at the Curragh. Owen, how big of a weekend just is this in general terms in the Irish racing schedule?
It's definitely, you know, we've had Royal Ascot last week, and it's definitely after the Guineas last month, this is probably the first big marker in the Irish racing calendar. The Irish Derby itself is probably struggling a small bit internationally, you know, for its recognition. It's kind of been squeezed a small bit. We've had the English Derby over in Epsom at the beginning of the month. We've also had the French Derby. They kind of reinvented their race. They dropped it down in distance slightly. And our race has maybe a small bit been left behind. We don't have the winner of the English Derby. He's going to go, City of Troy is going to go to the Eclipse next Saturday. We haven't had the winner for the French Derby in about 25 years, and the race itself, it probably just needs something just to really kind of change it up a small bit. It's down in the world rankings. Last year's race was down in 163rd. So we've got a competitive race this year, but probably just needing a bit of star quality.
Well, speaking of star quality, actually, jockey Ryan Moore will ride Los Angeles for the first time in the Derby at the Curragh. Los Angeles was third in the Epsom Derby under Wayne Lorden, and Moore is hoping that Los Angeles can reverse placings with Ambient Friendly. He was second at Epsom, I should say. Ryan Moore was speaking to Dave Keenan.
Los Angeles, you know, he was a Group 1 winning 2-year-old, won his trial nice, it leapt down, and he ran a super race in the Derby. You know, I think the Curragh will suit him well. Done very little wrong in his career. Obviously, he's got to turn the form around with Ambiente Friendly, who was a good runner-up in the Derby. We've got a few lengths to find, but hopefully, you know, he's still open to improvement, and we'd like to think he can find a little bit more returning to the Curragh, perhaps.
So, Owen, can Los Angeles give Aidan O'Brien a 16th victory in the race?
Yeah, I definitely think a genuine case can be made for him, but I do think Ambiente Friendly is the correct favourite for the race. You know, going into Epsom, I thought the fear with Ambiente Friendly was that the occasion might just get to him. He can get buzzed up and over-race in the race itself. In the end, it was actually Los Angeles who didn't handle the preliminaries as well as Ambiente Friendly had done. But I thought it was a very big performance from Ambiente Friendly at Epsom. You could argue he was going best of all, including City of Troy at the 2 furlong pole. He had every chance going into that crucial final quarter of a mile. He was really just simply beaten by a better horse in City of Troy. I know the case is being made. You heard from Ryan there that the Curragh is more of a stamina test. It has the stiffer finish when you compare it with Epsom. But I thought Ambiente Friendly hit the line the stronger of the two that reoppose on Sunday. I suppose one of the factors to consider with Los Angeles is that he goes into Sunday as the number one focus of the Ballydoyle quartet in the race. They're going to try and run the race to suit him, maximise his chances. Whereas at Epsom, he was the definite number two. He was maybe a semi-pacemaker of sorts behind Euphoric. So it's hard to know just how much his chance was compromised by the team role that he had to play setting up the race for City of Troy. So I suppose with the Tour de France starting over the weekend, you can always draw a comparison with tactics between cycling and racing when you have those couple of runners from the one stable in a race. And on Sunday, you know, Los Angeles, he's the one that the O'Brien team are really pinning their hopes on getting that yellow jersey.
Now, before the Derby, we have Group 1 action tomorrow with the Pretty Polly Stakes. A lot of British challengers, I think Ryan's saying, 5 of the 8 runners.
Yeah, and Emily Upjohn will probably be one of the star attractions in the race. And really looking forward to seeing her in the flesh tomorrow. She was the best mare in the world rankings last year, joint best mare alongside a Japanese filly, Liberty Island. You know, that's the calibre of horse that we're getting to deal with in her. Interestingly, Kieran Schumark, the jockey, he's the man who really had the unenviable task of trying to fill the riding boots of a certain Frankie Dettori. He's the stable jockey now to John and Thady Gosden, her trainer. And he would have been going into this year, you know, really wanting to stamp his position on that new job. The results, though, they just haven't been going their way so far. In a lot of the cases, I don't think it's really been his fault. I don't think the stable really this season have the ammunition there at the moment. It's probably a bit like a Formula One driver. You can only do as much as the car that you have will let you. He said during the week that he isn't feeling the pressure. But if Emily Upjohn, if she was to come past, bounce back from Epsom and come past the line in front in a Group 1 tomorrow, I think it'll be a rather relieved Kieran Schumacher that we'll see in the winner's enclosure.
Okay, that is certainly something to keep an eye on. A bit more broadly speaking, it was something of a mixed week for the Irish juveniles at Royal Ascot last week. Derby weekend usually gives us plenty of clues into how they're shaping up. So in that regard, where's the attention going to be?
Yeah, I'd say the Railway Stakes is probably one of those races that's going to give us a lot of clues. It's another race over the weekend that's really boosted by a strong English challenge. We've got Richard Hannan and Kevin Ryan. They're both represented in the race. But you mentioned that mixed week in Royal Ascot last week. The two juvenile successes for Irish two-year-olds, they both came in fillies races. It was a bit of a disappointing showing from the Irish colts. So there'll be what the Railway Stakes will give us. Arizona Blaze was probably the best performer, you could say, of the colts. He was third in the Norfolk. Now, he's turned out quickly. We'll see him on Sunday. He's going to try and give his trainer, Adrian Murray, his second win in the race in a row after Bucanero Birthday last year. But it's the time of the year where we're really starting to see those first time out maiden winners pitched in against each other, so we're expecting to learn a lot from this weekend, particularly as we gear towards the likes of the Phoenix Stakes in the weeks to come.
A lot of our conversation has been devoted to overseas or horses. You know, I kind of feel, are the home team going to struggle to keep a lot of the prizes on this side of the Irish Sea?
I'd say they're fairly up against it a bit, Shane. You know, I don't think we've seen such a strong travelling team of challengers from England across, you know, so many different races on Derby weekend. We've obviously got the three in the Derby itself, which is a big boost. But when you see that, you know, the likes of the Pretty Polly, the Railway Stakes, two of the races we've mentioned, from a spectator's point of view, it's brilliant. You know, it really adds to the weekend. We've seen probably the trend for the last couple of weeks, you know, on Irish 2000 Guineas Day at the Curra last month. Three of the four group races on that card, they all went for export over to England. And now you've got really the live possibility that we could finish this weekend and have the prospect of four of the five Irish Group 1 races run so far all being won by English trainers, and that will not go down well.
No, on that bombshell, Owen Ward, thank you very much, gentlemen. Great chatting as always, lots to look forward to. There will be updates from the Curra both on Saturday Sport and Sunday Sport and RT Radio 1. That is all we have time for this evening. Massive thanks to Barry O'Neill, who produced this evening's show, Max Falvey, who was our BCO. Blond and Tracy is up next with the official chart show, so do stay tuned to 2FM. Game On will be back at 6 o'clock on Monday, so have a great weekend. From all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. RTE 2FM.